So this is actually the extended title. And let me acknowledge my collaborators. Peter is here, and Jing Ni. And there are two parts of it. One involves the third order structure function, the other second. In the case of third order, there's an equality, whereas in the case of second order, there's an inequality. So let me give you some background of the work. This audience, I don't have to spend too much time on this. As you know, Kolmogorov has three papers in 1941, and the first two concern the longitudinal structure function, and based on very general arguments, without any based on very general arguments with little appeal to Navier-Stokes dynamics, Kolmogorov has some prediction on this quantity. This theta is the angle between the delta u and y, which is the displacement vector of the velocity. X and y are vectors here. And Kolmogorov assumed in his derivation a statistically stationary, homogeneous, and locally isotropic flow. It was also hypothesized that this quantity, the dissipation, was independent of viscosity as the viscosity tended to zero. The implications of these assumptions are of the isotropic and homogeneity assumptions are that this, when you do this ensemble average, that you get this only to depend on R, which is the absolute value of this displacement vector y. Now, Kolmogorov predictions are, of course, well known to this audience, that when you look at some scale which is far, far bigger than the Kolmogorov scale and far, far smaller than some L, which is indicative of this length scale over which the forcing is occurring, assuming that there is such a separation of scale. This is the inertial scale. This is the result where zeta n is n over 3. And this restriction, of course, means that it is only sensible if you have this condition valid. Kolmogorov's third paper, on the other hand, in 1941, used the Karman-Howarth equation, which was derived from the Navier-Stokes equation by Karman and Howarth, and under some assumptions, including that of local isotropy, homogeneity, and time stationarity. And under those assumptions, Kolmogorov has this result, the so-called four-fifth law. So in a sense, n equal to 3 is special, as you know, that there's some connection to Navier-Stokes dynamics. But as you know, in this conference, we learned that there are issues about isotropy. And of course, if you have an infinite flow in an infinite domain, homogeneity with velocity decaying to zero at infinity, the homogeneity could not possibly be valid because the question I'm going to ask first in the first part of my talk is whether these results can be correct even when these statistical hypotheses are not valid. So there are two parts of the presentation. The first part, actually both of them have come out in print. The first one involves Ching, me and myself, came out in, and it involves the third order structure function. And the second part involves some statements about upper bounds. So this is work with Constantine and Ni. And that involves rigorous inequalities involving the energy spectrum and second order structure function. Now, if you want to relax something, if you want to move away from the Kolmogorov hypothesis, then we found it necessary to actually use something that has been used before, namely instead of using a statistical ensemble average, to do an averaging over space-time. This you have seen from Charlie's talk that this is common in the mathematical literature. And on top of that, we do a solid angle average over all possible orientation of the displacement vector y. So if you remember delta u, maybe I should put this down here because I'll be referring to these basic definitions. The advantage of multimedia presentation, I suppose. I will try to put it. Okay, so those are the essential definitions we'll be using. Delta U is the difference, and theta is the angle between delta U and Y, as I mentioned before, and d omega refers to a solid angle differential over a sphere of radius Y absolute. So, of course, if you go through these operations, it's clear a priori that you could not, if this makes sense at all, that it cannot depend on your X, and it cannot, because you have integrated over the volume, it cannot depend on time because you're doing this long time average, and since you're integrating over all possible orientation of Y, it could not possibly depend on anything but the absolute value of Y. So this is a different kind of averaging, space-time solid angle averaging, and this we denote by the same symbol here. And this L is some energy producing length scale, which we'll make specific later on. Yes? No, I think it's okay. Yeah. All right. Of course, this is SNK, K after Kolmogorov, and of course, in our derivation, we'll also encounter the quantity SN, which is without this cosine factor, and also there is some relation which actually is an intermediate step to finding result for S3K, is that we'll end up with another result on this quantity, a modified third order structure function, which is delta U cube, but instead of cosine cube there, for n equal to 3, we have just cosine theta. And I will not carry around y comma delta u. That's just the theta that I'm talking about here. This is just to remind that theta is the angle between y and delta u. Okay. Now, our starting point is the Navier-Stokes equation. By the way, I should comment that since you're using this different averaging process, a priori there is, you know, a priori for a flow which is not isotropic or not homogeneous or the statistics is not time stationary or, you know, you don't know anything about those, there is no reason to expect that these results would come out to be anything like Kolmogorov. Yeah. So our starting point is the incompressible forced Navier-Stokes equation. And of course, there is some assumption on the forcing. It's an L2. This is the long time space average of this the forcing, which you can control. There, we will see that up to a certain point, the equation is exact and holds for all Reynolds numbers. So we'll see from that point when we try to simplify and prove theorems where these assumptions come in. But I make this comment also because even when these conditions are violated, it is still possible to say something once you get to the last equation in our paper. So you have that, and you also require that the gradient of f is in L2. And now this is an assumption which you need when you have an infinite, the domain is infinite. By the way, I should say the domain is either infinite or a periodic box. When it's infinite, you do need this assumption that the energy is finite. When the box is a periodic geometry and you are in a right Galilean frame where there is no average velocity, then it's or in a slab geometry, not just a periodic box, then it is possible to use Poincaré inequality and come up with some bounds on this based on the forcing. But let's just use this as an assumption here, because we want to tackle both cases. Now we define now specifically energy giving scale to be this quantity, the L2 norm of F divided by that, U to be the square root of energy, and as I said, I'm in the right proper Galilean frame, so this this this, and because this makes sense, we have the, this is the velocity scale. That's the usual epsilon. We also need to define another length scale, L, which is epsilon over U. Instead of, we replace this by epsilon over U. And this is like the Taylor length scale, eta, which is nu over U times nu over epsilon, the half. Now, how am I doing on time? Here I was just trying to show that you can do something, say something about the energy, upper bound energy using Poincaré inequality when you have a slab geometry. This was brought to my attention by Charlie. It is known that, of course, that the work, the average work done, is must match the average dissipation, right? So therefore, using some inequality, elementary inequality, you know that you must have this this condition. This is Cauchy-Schwarz inequality, and so therefore, the L, which is small L, which is epsilon over U, necessarily has to be smaller than capital L. But I don't know. I mean, if you make additional hypotheses, you could possibly say it's the same order as capital L, but we don't know. We don't have to assume that. Now, besides the assumption A through C that I mentioned about the forcing and about the energy being finite, we require that there is a separation of scale. Now, how this will be achieved, we don't say. So in other words, we're looking at the class of all solutions for which this is a limiting result. So for which we can attain this limiting process either by changing, making the viscosity smaller and smaller. So this Kolmogorov is something like the Kolmogorov condition that epsilon is finite. So this is the condition that we need to prove our theorems. Now our principal results are that limit R over small L, not capital L, unfortunately. Small L is slightly smaller than, smaller than capital L. R over L tending to zero and R over eta C tending to infinity. This is, of course, a subrange of the usual inertial scale. So because my small L is bigger than the capital L, which would be the usual inertial scale, and eta C, which is the Taylor length scale, is a bit considered usually larger than eta. In this subrange of inertial scale, we have this exact relation. Now notice that I don't necessarily have to assume, provided this assumption is correct, epsilon could actually go as nu tends to zero. Epsilon could actually go to zero, but provided this quantity it tends to zero, that's all I require. Of course, you could then say that u also depends on epsilon nu. I do not want to get into that controversy. I'll just assume that is the relation. S3 tilde is the time average of T3 tilde. This is cosine theta without the cube. And this is both a result and also an intermediate, a very necessary intermediate step to get S3k. You do need this result. Okay. Now these are in a sense an exact relation. Of course, you're using a limiting case. The important thing is, you know, you don't need the isotropy stationary or hypothesis because essentially you have ruled it out by the way you have defined these quantities. And of course, I should also say that solid angle averaging has been used in other contexts, like Tapman and Pullin, the London Tom's work in that context. So it's none of what I'm saying is really all that new. How does the derivation go? Up to a certain point, it is almost like. If you look at the book by Monin and Yaglom, up to a certain point, it goes that way. So essentially what it is you formulate an equation for delta U. It was first brought to my attention by Peter Constantine, but that you can write it in a nice way. And I looked at Monin and Yaglom's derivation. It's quite the same. And once you get to an equation for delta U, then you actually take the dot product of that equation with delta U, volume average, and integrate over y over a spherical ball of radius r. Of course, I use y tilde as the integration variable because r is the absolute of y. And this is what comes out of this is an exact relation. Now, this is the step I need to get my result for S3 tilde. All right. Now, let's look at these quantities and try to understand each of the terms. This is coming from the forcing. And look at the definition of F. It's delta F dot delta U, volume average of that, and then you do a long time average. So this is, if you do long time average, you get G, but I'm not that there at this stage yet. So that's the forcing. This is the quantity whose long time average is going to give me S3 tilde, which is one of the results we want. And this is epsilon 1, which means essentially the dissipation, but without doing the time average yet. Okay, so it's a function of R. And this is the viscous terms gives you these two terms. That's the dissipation term, and that's another T2, as you can see here, is just the solid angle and the volume average of this quantity. So with n equal to 2 over there. So this is what you get. So essentially now, after this step, you do a time average from 0 to t and divide by 1 over capital T and take the limit of t tending to infinity. Now, of course, you have to be assured that this quantity at the limit of large time tends to is not blowing up. But then you know that this quantity has some bounds in terms of the energy. So therefore, you know, it goes through, and what you get is you don't get any contribution from this when you do a long time average, meaning limits capital T tending to infinity 1 over T when you integrate this out. So what you get is this term over here, this term, the long term, and this, the time average of that is capital G, and you get S3 tilde. This is an exact relation because there is, it holds for any, I haven't used any of my hypotheses yet, right, except for the energy being finite, that this is an exact relation. Now, notice that if you had, for instance, instead of a L2 forcing, you had some other kind of forcing, you could still milk out some results based on the properties of these. So now, of course, the relation that I'm going to talk about is try to show that this is equal to that under proper limits. Now, that would mean I have to rigorously prove that these two terms are small compared to that. Okay? And that's the rest of the relation, and that's where I need all these limiting processes that I mentioned before. But so far up to this, that's exact. Now, you can do the same thing for... So in other words... let me see. Thank you. I mentioned this something that the energy can be bounded. In the process, I seem to mess up my slide a bit, but I hope you can still read it. Now you have some proposition, namely that the two terms, extra terms that I have on the left-hand side are small. This is the body term, body forcing term, and this is where you need that. And that the length scale R is far smaller than L. And so there is a theorem that this is true, and there is another theorem that that is true. And of course, in order for both of these to hold at the same time, you need the separation of scales, namely A to C over L tending to 0. That's where you need that. That's how you actually say that the flow is not boring. The only reason you have equality rather than inequality is because you are saying you're looking at A to C over L. You're looking at the solutions for which A to C over L, you're going through a limiting process so that A to C over L tends to 0. So if you had a very boring flow, a laminar flow, all right, then of course that would not be true. That ratio would not tend to 0. So this is some way of telling the mathematics that that's how you get an equality rather than inequality. Okay. Now that's how you get a result for S3 tilde. Now the result for S3k, it's a bit more grungy, But let me just essentially, I don't want to subject you to do all the details, but it's quite similar. Essentially, you formulate an equation for delta u dot y, multiply through by delta u, do volume average over x for all space, and then followed by volume average over y for a ball of radius r, followed by time average. And after you do all that, you get lots of terms, lots of integration by parts, and essentially you get a solution for exact relation up to a certain point involving S3 tilde, and therefore you do need the S3 tilde that you got before, and you get other body and forcing terms, and you can prove under the conditions that we have given that the other terms are not important. So that's it. That's the first part of my talk. And let me now talk about the second part, which involves Peter along with Chin Ni. By the way, yeah, it's going to be short. But maybe I quickly flash this through. Now the result is of course limiting. What happens for large time? What happens when eta c over L tends to zero, right? So you wonder how it will be if you do a numerical simulation. Our resources only allowed numerical simulation for Taylor at the time, a Taylor Reynolds number about 155, but here in this audience the things are much improved and we could do probably better now. But what do we want to do with the numerical simulation? We want to check if the flow is isotropic. We wanted to know that if our results are just academic, or is there some value in this result? At the time, we didn't know. Should we assume? Is the assumption that flow? Some people say very strongly that the flow will be isotropic at the smallest scale. Other people say that's not true. And so we wanted to see, to the extent that we could, with numerical work, how good are the results in the sense that if we did not do a solid angle averaging, which is for practical purpose because there's too many operations, then do we recover this in a particular direction in y? Do we recover this four-fifths law or the four-third law that we are talking about? The other result is, is the finite Reynolds number effect. So we use the flow for which you could jack up the Reynolds number because the flow is highly symmetric. And this is by Kida, and I am not going to go through the details and just show you the result. The result is, this is the first computation we did. G1 is this essentially what you expect, namely if you divide S3 tilde by epsilon r, then that's G1, except we haven't done, it's not quite G1 because we did not do the solid angle average. So we looked at y in a particular direction. And so this is 4/3 and 4/5. So we look at we are looking at those ratios. Now what should be the theoretically predicted thing is this line here. That's the 4/3 law, and that's the Kolmogorov's 4/5 law. And these are for different you see a lot of these because we wanted to do for longer and longer time period until things have settled. They seem to have settled, but for engineering purposes, I suppose you'd say they have settled, but we had difficulty going to very far time for obvious reasons. But essentially, the last two graphs are indistinguishable, so at least to the eye. So then what happens is, you see a certain range at this Taylor Reynolds number. As you increase Taylor Reynolds number farther, you see it's better. It's certainly better. You have a range where it looks like you have attained the initial predicted thing. So we're quite happy about it. Now we wanted to see what would happen in another direction. So you have these are for periodic box calculations. So we did it along the face. Then we went on the diagonal. When we went along the diagonal, we find something very different. We do not see that. There is no range where, in this case, this is for the larger Reynolds number. This is for the smaller. There is no range where it's even constant, let alone arrive at these two results. Now, what is So essentially, it's clear that the flow has an isotropy at this Reynolds number. There are two explanations. If you jack up the Taylor Reynolds number even further, perhaps they will disappear. Perhaps they won't, in which case our result may be useful for experimentalists in the sense that if you do a solid angle averaging, that you would recover the 4/5 and 4/3 law. Okay. So now let me move to the second order. I don't have much time, so I'll quickly flash through this. This is work with Peter Constantin and Qing Yi. And essentially, let me recall, the result for second order structure function is epsilon 2/3 r to the 2/3 in the inertial scale. More generally, you expect the Kolmogorov theory to predict something like that for when you only have r far far smaller than the than the body scales, and you don't make any distinction between inertial and viscous scale, then this is the more general relation. Of course, if the Fourier transform, through Fourier transform, you get the famous Kolmogorov 5/3 law, which is a source of some debate about corrections here. And then you generally, this is in the inertial regime, you expect something like that. Now, the question is, what can you get from the Navier-Stokes equation directly? There are some derivations based on the on particular solutions of the Navier-Stokes equation by Tom Lundgren and later by others, but they are for very particular kind of vortex structures. So we are looking at a general situation for whatever comes out from the solution. So we are not our method of derivation does not involve looking at what the solutions are doing. They're based directly on the equations. So so therefore, in a way, we can say something, but in other ways we can't say what is really going on in terms of the vortex interpretation. Now, in order to describe our results, we need to introduce something called Littlewood-Paley decomposition, but maybe before that, let me just give broadly the results, and then I will explain this. For the time being, our result is that if you have the wave number, the forcing, the Fourier transform of the forcing has zero contribution for large enough k, right? So in other words, you're not putting forcing on a small scale. Essentially, that's what it is saying. If that's true, then you might think of it for the timing. I'll explain it more clearly in the next thing. This you might think of as the band average Fourier spectrum. Okay, you too. And with this little bit of weighting. Okay. So our result is that you get this. Now, what is to be noted here is, of course, we cannot remove, first few things to remember. If you didn't have this, we'd be more pleased. Of course, we can't do that because our methodology does not distinguish between inertial and viscous length scale. So we necessarily have to have some function of that. But the other thing is, notice, I didn't put epsilon. I put epsilon tilde, hat. That's what comes out of the mathematics. Now, epsilon hat is not the same as epsilon. It's in fact is based on the L3 norm of gradient of U. Now, unlike the previous presentation I made where epsilon, even for solutions weak solutions, you know that it exists. But this quantity, a priori, we do not know it exists. So our theorem assumes that this is less than infinity, that this space-time average of this quantity is true. But you give me that assumption, then the important thing is that you do not have epsilon coming in here. You get something else, which is epsilon hat. Now, you usually hear people say, well, epsilon is the only thing that can come in because from dimensional consideration. Well, this has the same dimension as epsilon hat, but a different form of averaging. So you have epsilon hat to the 2/3, k to the minus 5/3 here, and you have a kd, a dissipation scale, a modified dissipation wave number, which is based on epsilon hat. So that's the result. Now, more precisely, the Littlewood, how am I doing? I'm gone. I'm already over. Okay. So maybe I want people to question me. So I you can get something for another inequality to compensate for the second order structure function. This is true for every scale. Now, lambda is something to do with the forcing. So when you're looking at R over lambda very small, this isn't there. Now, if you believe that this epsilon and epsilon hat are of the same order, then and you're looking at R over eta far, far larger than 1, then of course this is more important. So you essentially get the complement of the other results on the energy spectrum. This is on the second order structure function. So we have numerical results to show how whether or not these how good these things are, and these are the upper bounds. This is for two smaller Taylor Reynolds number. You see this pattern, but here it looks like our upper bound is of course very generous for the inertial scale. Here what we are doing is we are plotting energy spectrum divided by epsilon hat 2/3 k to the minus 5/3. So this should be a straight line in the inertial scale if the Kolmogorov hypothesis is correct. But we use epsilon hat rather than epsilon, and we do different kinds of forcing. But this is as good as we can get. So what is the conclusion? Conclusion is that based on a single solution, a Navier-Stokes equation, even a weak one for which we know a priori that you have gradient of u, the epsilon makes sense. We have a precise result in terms of the Kolmogorov four-fifths law and some other modified structure function for four-third law. Numerical calculations show that there is a lack of isotropy at least at the Taylor number. It is possible of 155. It is possible that the flow will become isotropic. If that is the case, our result is probably. If that is not the case, then our result probably would be more than academic interest. And then we have some rigorous upper bounds for little Paley energy spectrum, and the bounds are a bit too generous for inertial scale. Numerical results give some support. That's all. The average of this, four-fifths, yeah. As far as I know, that was unknown, yeah.
I'd like to make a comment, quick one. I mean, what to say about the averaging over the solid angle is in our language. So one can actually do a more complete expansion in terms of the irreducible representation of the S of the simple group. And this is the first one. This is the projection onto the isotropic sector. So not only that, I think it is useful for special emulation purposes, it's a must if you want to extract what people refer to as the isotropic numbers. But still, I think we've made it comment a few times this week. So if there is no more questions, I think we